I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 337. Y'all, I'm so tired, and you all know why? Because we've been staying up late watching Bridgerton.
Hey, I didn't ruin your thunder this time.
I know I talked about it last week, but I'm obsessed, and Colby watches it with me, which is my favorite, and I love it.
This is what I need you to do. Anytime Tiffany and I are like, hey, we're watching this show and it's really good, I need you to watch it with us. Because you're like 4 years too late.
It's my plight in life.
And so she's like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, I don't remember the first season, okay? Like, I'm like, yeah, good one. Don't, like, I have no idea. Yeah.
What I want to know, though, is the daughter, Daphne, did she get new teeth? Because I feel like she got veneers either at the end of season one or end of season two. They're beautiful. But I think she got, I got to know. I'm like, did her teeth change? But they're gorgeous. Like, they are so subtle veneers that I'm not sure. Like, that's how beautiful they are.
Now, Daphne is the one from the first season?
Yes.
Okay, because I was going to say, they changed the actress.
For the third season? One. Yeah.
Okay. I was just like, that's a whole nother girl.
No. That's the first season. You're thinking Francesca.
Yeah, that's her name. See, I don't fucking remember this shit. Well, something that is, like, you know, right now, so in...
The shade.
Sabrina Carpenter's new album, giving me all the life. My brother hasn't been able to go to the gym with me, and so I finally was like, you know what? I'm going to take my headphones, and I'm just going to listen to my music. It's 39 minutes long, I know, because I do it twice. And so I, like, fucking love that whole album. One, I tried to call it a CD, and I was like, oh, CDs don't even exist anymore. You know, it's an album.
Yeah.
But, oh my God, I'm like, I've lived this. Like, everything she says, she's just amazing. And that is, like, just chef's kiss. I did 40 minutes of cardio instead of my 30 because I was, like, jamming to her, you know? But it's really hard for me not to sing in public and stuff, so, like, sometimes I'll just be like mouthing the words to me, but it's all it is.
Now that please, please, please song, that's good.
Right?
I know that because of TikTok.
Like Chapel Roan has been on, like it was Taylor Swift, then Chapel Roan, and now it's Sabrina Carpenter. Also, I found my jam with this new girl who did my pedicure and manicure. This is the last manicure I'm going to get because Carrie got me the Ohura nails and stuff. But for my pedicure, I'm going back to her. One, it's like by appointment only, so it's only you in there. And if like her co-owner has someone doing lashes or like something like that, but no one was there. She doesn't have a massage seat, but the seat, like it's like a T bar that comes up and you rest your feet on it. I didn't have to pick my feet up.
What?
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is amazing. Perfect.
You gave me her card and I took it out of my pocket. I feel like in here. Can I text her for an appointment tomorrow?
Like, legit. Also, she works out. And let me tell you, with her massage and like on both my hands and my feet, I was like, oh my God, I'm in heaven. Like, that girl's strong. Like, I legit, next time I'm going to be like, I'm not getting a manicure, but can I pay you extra just to like do the hand massage real quick and then I'm gone?
When this comes out, it'll be Labor Day, which means it'll be almost time to put up Halloween decorations.
For sure.
Colby keeps saying, I'm so ready to put up Halloween decorations.
I am too. I legit told my coworkers that the first week, I think I have 2 days off, like at some point, it's like a Thursday and a Friday. That's when I'm going to put my decorations up. And I was like, I think it will make me happier. I will say the pedicure lady, her name is Harley Ainsworth. If you're local, she's amazing. Find her on Facebook. Seriously, freaking amazing. But she loves Halloween too. And her boyfriend and her son, like they go all out and stuff. So she was showing me some of their costumes. And I was like, oh my God, you're my people. But I almost left my cup and it's a pink tumbler that has ghost on it. And she called it my boo cup or whatever. And like, she was like, oh, Lord, you're just wanting my summer to go away. And I was like, no, I want the heat to stay, but I just love Halloween. And that's how we got on that subject. But when I was leaving, she was like, hey, you left your boot cut, boo. And I was like, you are my people. I love you.
You get attached so fast. I know. I was thinking the other morning on the way to work, because Monday night I played pickleball with my coworker friend Megan and then like one of her friends. And I was like, do I have enough friends now to have a Halloween party?
Oh my gosh.
But then I was like, no, I don't. It would be me, Donna, Tiffany, Colby, and my friend Megan. Not enough for a Halloween party.
Oh, Lord. But speaking of that, Tiffany knows what she wants to do for her birthday, and that's going to a pumpkin patch with like a maze and everything. Hopefully we can get out of the maze, because me and Tiffany do not have a good record with a corn maze.
When Colby and I first got together, we went to the beach with my sister and all these people, and we did, where was it? I think it was like a Ripley's place. And they had a mirror maze.
Oh, we know. Y'all made out.
I got very lost in there. Like, I could not figure it out. He was fine. He knew where we were the whole time. I was, like, kind of starting to panic a little bit. Like, no, I really don't know how to get out of here, you know?
Yeah. Well, that corn maze, it had trivia. And I was like, okay, cool. It's going to be, like, Halloween stuff. It was about corn. And I was like, what? Like, I don't know.
It's got big fluffy knobs. It has a juice. That's all I know.
Like, it was like actual trivia.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but that doesn't help me. Like, I don't know how many Americans eat 5 ears of corn a day. Like,
a day?
I'm just making up a fucking thing. But it was like literally numbers like that, like statistics.
I'm like, Donna doesn't know statistics about anything, much less corn.
No, numbers are not my forte.
You know what is our forte? Patreoners. Thank you so much, Mindy W. from Montana.
Nicole H. from Michigan.
Katie H. from Tennessee.
And Susan O. from New Mexico. I know, right?
Y'all can't see me. I made a face of excitement because it rhymed.
She made her O face.
Y'all, they're getting all the good on Patreon. So if you want to check that out, like an extra episode a week, and you know, some other shiz sprinkled in, head on over to patreon.com/theAPC podcast. Y'all know what? We are on like the cusp of football season. Like, it is beginning, like in days.
Well, it has begun.
I know, but like our college and stuff here.
Oh, I was like, it was literally on the TV the other day.
But I'm so not into it right now. And I really haven't been for like a couple of years. And I don't know why. I used to love it. Like, I used to be able to tell you so many Saints players and our, like our local college and stuff. And now I literally don't know anybody.
Me either. When Mama died, I stopped watching it.
Yeah.
It just wasn't fun by myself.
Yeah. And that was kind of too, like, when I moved to Houston, like, I would listen to it on the radio and stuff, like, through the app, because I was in Houston and I couldn't get any of the stuff for the Saints. I don't know. And then when I moved back home even closer and could watch it all, I just kind of stopped. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But I've also been, like, really into baseball, too, though, you know? And I think some of that's because Colby loves baseball more than football. But then he's been watching all kinds of football stuff, like Last Chance U and like...
Oh, I love that.
All kinds of stuff. And I'm like, maybe we'll start watching football again. Also, y'all want to know what I'm looking at right now?
Guess what?
Bean Boozled. We have had that Bean Boozled over there for almost a whole fucking year.
Mm-hmm.
I got that in December. And we were like, we're going to do a live of us doing the Bean Boozled game. Or at the very least, like, take a video of us doing it. And post it. And we still haven't done it.
We have not.
So we got to get on that. Y'all, remind us.
Please. Well, it's hard because if we do a live, we need to be able to see the comments and stuff. And I do like lives more because you get to interact with people. But if you want Colby and Tiffany to do it, it's hard to... We are 4 extra large pizzas.
We ain't fitting up in this.
Yeah, no. Especially because we got extra large pizza chairs that have like a tall back. It's like executive looking fucking chairs.
This?
Yeah.
I feel like it's just a regular.
No, they're that's like the executive kind.
Oh.
A high back.
Oh. Ooh, bougie. We got it at the dirt cheap.
Yeah, we did. She's acting like a girl.
I don't know shit about shit when it comes to office furniture.
Good Lord.
Okay, well, before we get into this episode, we got to talk about BetterHelp because this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Y'all have heard us talk a bunch of times about BetterHelp and, well, how much it's helped us. I've definitely used BetterHelp to kind of work through some stuff, and it's really helped me. But what helped me almost as much as the fact of, you know, getting professional help was the way that BetterHelp is designed, i.e., it's all online.
You're right, though, because that's a hurdle. It's hard to get over. It's like, oh, I have to do X, Y, Z to make myself go to therapy. But here, you can literally do it however you're comfortable. And it's hard for us to make time for ourselves, but BetterHelp being online and so easily accessible, that really helps us to make time for ourselves.
Because look, it's back to school season and we are busy. Maybe you don't have time to think about yourself, or you feel like you don't, and you just have the hustle and the bustle of this back to school era, but maybe it's time to start taking some time for yourself. Because with BetterHelp, given, like we said, and we always say, it's entirely online. So you're not having to leave work, go to an office, park, walk in, do your session, leave, drive back to the office, get back to work, get back to the kids, get back to all the things. It's literally at your fingertips on your phone, on your computer, on your tablet.
Here's the difference. Carrie would have to do all of that. My main thing is, I'd have to put on a bra. And that right there would be a hurdle for me where I'm just like, well, I don't feel like it today. But with BetterHelp, like, I can do text if I want.
So for BetterHelp, all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire that gets you matched with a licensed therapist. If you're like me and that makes you a little bit anxious because what if you don't jive? What if you don't get along? Well, BetterHelp makes it free and easy to switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
And again, therapy isn't just for trauma or anything like that. It can be to learn positive coping skills. It can be to learn to set boundaries, to put yourself first.
It can even help you rediscover your curiosities or help you connect with people around you or anything like that just by learning new skills. So let BetterHelp help you today. Go to betterhelp.com/APC to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/APC.
One more time, that's BetterHelp.com/APC for 10% off your first month.
Rediscover your curiosity with BetterHelp. Picture it, Long Island, New York, February 1993. Gary Studbrink was 27 years old, again from Long Island, and he was a captain in the Air Force. But he hadn't been in Long Island for a little bit because he was stationed in San Antonio at a pharmacy, like a medical pharmacy. But why I said picture it and then said Long Island is because Gary had decided that he was going to make a surprise trip to see his family back home. And by surprise, that meant no one knew. And this all now will take place in Long Island.
Hey, was this in Long Island?
It was.
Oh, good to know.
Mm-hmm. So he got to his parents' house and everyone was happy, surprised, all the things. But then things started to get weird. So Gary had a best friend and he wanted to surprise him. So he called Mike while he was in town and was like, hey, can we arrange a time to go grab dinner, hang out? Now, this was on Monday, February 8th. And Mike was like, we spoke yesterday. Like, I know you're here. But Gary's like, no, the hell we didn't. Like, I literally just got here and I wanted to reach out. So Mike was like, no, I received a call from you yesterday. You sounded like you were sick, like, or getting over a cold. You said that you had flown in from LaGuardia. And again, like, you were coming down with a cold. And Gary's like, I came in from JFK and I'm not sick. So I don't know what you're saying. Like, I don't know who gave you that information, but it ain't right. So they were just kind of going back and forth, being like, this is weird as fuck. Maybe it was a random coincidence. Maybe he, you know, like just didn't hear Gary Wright when he called. And Gary's like, I didn't call, though.
But yeah.
That's the thing. So they just kept going round and round trying to figure out what happened. Now, that reminded me of when I prank called you and Tiffany. And it was like I called from Tiffany's number or something. And so you called her back and you were like, hey, you called me. Like, what's up? And Tiffany's like, what's up with you?
Yeah.
And y'all are like, no, you called me. No, you called me. And I'm like, hee-hee-hee-hee-hee.
Yes, that's right? So fucking true.
But this was in 1993, not 2011 or whenever that fucking was that I did that. So like, what, who was it? What happened? You know, like, it wasn't like he spoofed a number then because that app wasn't there, right? So it was around 10:30 at night. And they were still on the phone when there was another call that beeped in. Gary answered it, but something was off enough that he reached over and he hit record with their answering machine. Now, the voice on the other end of the line was weird. It was distorted, kind of robotic. And there's this recording of this call, and I'm going to tell you about it. And then we'll play it just a little bit because it's like 3 minutes long. I'm not gonna play the whole thing. And it's honestly just a bunch of confusion. And in it, you can hear Gary think that whoever's calling him is his brother, Steven, playing a prank on him. And you can hear him say that he looked at the caller ID and it said out of area. And he's like, is Steven out of area? Like, is he in an unknown area? And he's like, he's not local. He's in Queens. How is that out of area?
Yeah.
And then you can hear his parents in the room with him and they're chiming in and trying to listen to the call. Like, they'll pick up the receiver to see if they could hear who it was. Like, oh, well, maybe we know, like, it's so-and-so. But okay, before I kind of transcribe the call for you, I'm going to let you listen to a second of it.
Yeah, who's this, Steven? Are you playing games with me or what? Huh? Steven, if you're playing games, I'm going to kick your ass.
So how long are you going to be back from Texas?
Huh?
You're being impersonated by the other voice.
Yeah, this is you, Steven, you idiot. You're pissing me off. Jerk. I'm going to get you on. Let's see what it says. Review. One new call out of area. Is Steven out of the area?
Are you going to be back from Texas?
Wait, say that again?
You're being impersonated by the other voice.
Okay, if you couldn't make that out, the caller asked if it was Gary Sudbrink, but he stammered. Like, it was like, again, the Sudbrink. And then he asked, how long are you going to be back from Texas? And then it said, you're being impersonated by the other voice. So what the fuck is this other voice? And like, who is this? Because they know he's home from San Antonio in Long Island at his parents' house, knew his parents' number. What's going on? And this went on for a little bit. But finally, it was like the person on the other end just stopped talking or answering or whatever. And if you could hear it, if you could make that out, it was just very slow and low and just eerie. It honestly, it's not the same, but just his cadence and stuff reminded me of Carrie's story that she did of the Toy Box Killer. Like how I was like, oh, I want to hear the tapes. And then I was like, no, I never want to do that again.
Yeah.
And it was just creepy. It wasn't to that level because that was on a whole different level. This is just like someone that you're like, is this a prank? That's not a prank. Like, you knew from those things, like, that wasn't a prank.
Right.
But it's just like, what is this? Who is this? Why would you say this? But that wasn't going to be the end of it. About 30 minutes later, the phone rang again. And so Gary saw on the caller ID, unknown area or out of area. And so he just automatically started to record it on the answering machine again. Now, I will say, I didn't know that you could just directly record to the answering machine, but mine would, if I didn't pick up in time and it picked up, it would then record the whole fucking conversation. Mm-hmm. And I was like, mother, because then you have to rewind the tape, all the things, because, you know, me and Tiffany were talking about a lot of bullshit. Probably about Dylan and Brenda and why did he do that to her? Like they were our real friends. Now, the second call was more muffled. I'm not going to do it because it would just be hard to hear. However, if you go to normalparanormal.org, you'll be able to hear the calls in entirety.
Normal Paranormal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting how many websites I know exist that you don't know.
Yeah.
And how many websites you know that I don't know.
I mean, to be fair, I didn't know that existed before today.
But, I mean, like, in your looking up of things.
Yeah. But it is cool, though, that, like, sometimes, like, Atlas Obscura, mm-hmm. we both do that and something else.
Wikipedia.
No. Jerk. I can't remember the other one, but I was like, hey, I get some of my stuff from there, too. Like, it's just weird how it overlaps. But the second call basically said the same thing for the beginning. This Gary Sudbrink. And then the voice said, keep an eye on the skies. And Gary is, I'm going to say it again, he's from Long Island. Mm-hmm. And in this, in these messages, you can hear he's from Long Island.
Yeah.
Like, he's not the one to prank because he's like, who is this? What are you doing? Why are you calling me? Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Me, I'd been like, wait, what's going on? Like, you know what I mean? It just mm-hmm. would have been totally different. This guy is, and he's a captain in the Air Force. So he's just kind of like, what the fuck is going on? Why are you calling me? Why are you saying this? But it's saying like, keep an eye on the skies. Well, he's fucking a captain in the Air Force. So like, he's like, so what do you mean? Like, what's going on? Why are you calling about this? And then it said near Orion. And then it said, right. That's the only way I know that. Okay. But then it said the full moon. And so it goes on again. And like Gary's trying to understand what's going on. Cause again, it's real muffled. And then it said, saw double of you.
A doppelganger.
You know who you just sounded like?
What?
Scuttle from Little Mermaid.
Oh God. What does he say?
A dingle hopper.
Yes. I almost said a doohickey and I was like, no. But then when he's like snuzzling, or whatever, when he's talking about the pipe.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking too.
But no, because he's like, oh, a dingle hopper. Again, we referenced Disney. What the fuck? Though, did y'all know that they're going to have a villains area for Disney?
I think I heard that.
I am actually excited about that. That would be cool.
Colby asked me last night, he said, do you want to go to Disney World? And I said, fuck no. He said, me neither.
I wouldn't mind, like, after that's back. And, like, they're changing a lot because I have coworkers who live in Orlando. So they're all up on the Disney news. And, like, they really are changing a lot that I'm like, okay, in, like, 2 years I want to go.
Yeah, I love Disney, but I don't love walking.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Give me 2 years that maybe I can, you know, survive the trip.
You didn't survive your first trip, ma'am. You sprained your ankle on the first fucking ride.
That's what I mean. Yes. Like, hopefully I can survive this trip because it wasn't fun after that. But okay. So for this second call, like, we have to note that Gary is repeating what the caller has said because he's asking him, like, Orion? What about Orion? You know, and so Gary's dad's ears perked up. And he was like, hold on, let me have the phone. So his dad seemed to have like an interest in UFOs and stuff like that. But again, the voice didn't say anything, but just repeated, saw double of you. Now, his father then makes a statement. It's about a sighting or an experience that he had in West Virginia with Gary's uncle. But how he says it is like, he thinks this is an alien calling because he's like, I had an experience in West Virginia, which I'm pretty sure you know about. Like, you know what I mean? He's like thinking this is all connected. Now, the caller hung up the line without saying much more. But while Gary and his parents are discussing the two calls and just like what in the fuck is going on? A third call comes in, and this is at 11:30. So it's been like 30 minutes between each call now. Pretty much the same lingo, the same questions, just really creepy and cryptic and utterly confusing.
With the alliteration, ma'am.
But the next day, February 9th, which just BT Dubs is my oldest sister's birthday, around 10:30 at night, so around the same time, there's another call from the weird voice. And again, the voice asks if Gary Sudbrink was there. They go round and around. Gary's trying to understand what the fuck is going on. But then the voice on the other end of the phone says, "We come." And then it like has some like crackle, crackle, static, static to be within this planet. And then like crackle, crackle, you know, like it's, if y'all listen to the recordings, you'll hear it. And then it says, "In this planet, we come." And then like Gary's, he's questioning everything. Like, who are you coming to visit? What's going on? Like, where are you from? Like, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, just all of these things. The voice said, "To visit many, to be connected as the same with you." Now, again, Gary's dad and uncle just kind of exchanged glances. And so Gary's uncle, Tom, jumped on the line. And then all of a sudden, the voice says, "Beware, government interference, beware." And then it says it again, "Government interference, visitations to be disrupted by them." Tom heard a lot of static and like distorted background sounds. And then the voice came back and said, "The sun will rise on the dark side of the moon." And then it just like trailed off and then said, "World," and then "no," like K-N-O-W.
Isn't that song lyrics?
Dark side of the moon. But that's, I don't think the sun will rise on the dark side of the moon.
That's, is that not from Aquarius?
No.
Okay.
That's Pink Floyd.
No, I know, but not what you're talking about. I'm talking about a different song.
I know, Dawning of the Age of Aquarius thing.
Yes.
I don't think that says it. Does okay. it?
I don't know. Yeah. I know what song you're talking about, but I'm thinking of something totally different.
And then again, it says visitations to be disrupted by them. Some say it was just a prank because it was basically four of these calls over 2 days. But most believe that it was some kind of alien or otherworldly interaction, especially Gary's dad and uncle. People said that it kind of sounded like the Men in Black, which I know you love and totally believe in.
I'm not saying a word.
But they say that if you do come across the Men in Black, if they speak to you, it is like disjointed. It seems like a recording almost. It's very low, very slow. You know, it's not the normal cadence of you having a conversation with someone. And this is what that was. And it sounded like a recording. It literally just sounded like it was on a loop. But then if you think about if it was the Men in Black, even if that's like how they thought they communicated, like these are the words we know, we're trying to get this to you. And this is how we're trying to communicate with you. And that's like what they fucking know. Because they didn't have Babbel, okay? Also, when Gary was on the phone, like I mentioned, his dad was, you know, saying like, as you probably know, about the sighting that he had talked about. And then he had a side comment saying like, it seems like an intergalactic person. Now, Gary himself is a skeptic. He's like, these calls... they have to be a prank. Like, I don't know who it is, but like, they have to be a prank, right? As this became bigger, these calls have been used at UFO conferences and stuff like that. However, even though Gary has been skeptical, there's some shit that's happened that just kind of make this seem more creepy and more like, if this is a prank, it's an elaborate hoax, okay? So the reason why Gary thought Stephen was pranking him wasn't because Stephen was a prankster at all. Like, if we thought Colby was pranking us, that would make sense. Like, because he's a fibber. We've told y'all this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a liar. He's a fibber. I don't even remember what he said, but like, me and Carrie did not believe him. and it was fake. And he's like, ha, ha, ha. But then he had said something else and it was real. And we were like, I mean, is it real or what? Like,
yes.
We don't know how to take you because it'll be about the most asinine thing.
Like literally zero context. Like, what even made you think of that?
Yeah.
You know, he'll be like, well, I just saw a video. Yes. Like, God, like.
I mean, he keeps us on our toes. Okay.
Because I'll literally be like, is that for real? And it's not.
But Gary's brother, Stephen, wasn't like that. And also, I just feel like we don't know a whole lot about them, but they seem very matter of fact. Now, I mean, his dad and his uncle did say that they had that UFO experience and stuff, but I feel like they try to have an answer for things. And even just like Gary being in the Air Force and stuff, he likes like structure. And I don't know. I just don't see this guy being like Colby, like, hey, gotcha, you know? Mm-hmm. But the reason why he thought it was Stephen is not because it sounded like him or any of that. It's because Stephen said that he saw Gary driving beside him on the highway. And this was exactly the same car he drove, same color. And this was like a year before this happened, okay? And Stephen said that when he looked over to wave to be like, hey, and also to make sure it was Gary, which I totally get because I'm like, oh, is that Gary? And I'm like, speed up because I'm going to wave and I don't want to like just be this weirdo waving to this person. And they're like, why the fuck were you speeding up to wave at me, you know?
Yeah.
But he was doing that. And when he looked over, it was Gary, but then Gary made these really strange faces at him and then drove off. And Steven's like, the fuck is Gary being so fucking weird about? Like, and I don't know what kind of faces he made, but I don't think it was just like the, eh. Like, it, I feel like it was more like creepy kind of faces. Well, so Steven was going to a wedding and he was like, I'm just going to wait till I get there because Gary was supposed to be there. Like, he was in town. Steven saw Gary at the wedding and was like, dude, what the hell were those faces and shit on the highway? Like, that was fucking creepy. And Gary's like, I've been here for a while. And he didn't drive his car from Texas. So the car that was what he had in Texas, he wasn't in a car. He just flew in and then caught a ride with someone. So, like, it wasn't him, but again, it looked like him, all the things. And so he thought, is Stephen like pulling my leg or something? Like, why is he still going on about this? Why is he being weird on the phone? So again, it just kind of gives context as to why Gary would assume it was Stephen. Like, either this dude can write a joke out for a whole fucking year to wait for the punchline, or like, I don't know. Then after the calls, Gary was like, okay, so I thought it was kind of strange, but I just kind of brushed it off. But at the airport, when he was coming from Texas to Long Island, he had a strange encounter. He was getting ready to board the plane, and there was this kind of like nondescript man who approached him with a clipboard in hand. Gary thought he was some kind of salesman because he asked his name, the spelling, and he felt like, honestly, this guy was taking a census or something. So he just kind of like told him the general facts, but it wasn't like his phone number or anything like that, or like where he was going, whatever. It was more just like questions about him. And he answered his questions, did his part to contribute to the census, whatever, boarded the plane. However, another guy with a similar clipboard approached him and sat next to him. And again, Gary's like, what the fuck? You know, he was basically like, I already told your colleague all these answers, so just go get the information from him. Like, leave me alone. I don't understand what y'all are wanting. And the clipboard man was ushered away by the flight attendant because he wasn't in his assigned seat. However, like, right when Gary's like settling in, the guy crept back and sat behind Gary and continued to ask him questions. The guy again was moved away by the flight attendant, and Gary said that he never saw that man again. even when he was getting off the plane, he never saw him deboard the plane or disembark or whatever it's called. So it kind of just was like I know this happened and this man's not a fucking counted for. What's going on? So he stopped at a payphone when he got to the airport and he called his landlord in Texas and was like, hey, look, it was just a like flight that I wanted to catch. I'm coming to see my parents, all the things. Will you just make sure you watch the apartment? Because it just kind of rattled him. Like, why were they asking him these questions? And then, like, why were there two of them? Where did that guy go? You know, all of that. So enough that he stopped and made a fucking call to say,
yeah,
hey, watch my place. So I feel like he was thinking someone might have been targeting him for some kind of criminal thing with that. You know, like, oh, okay, this is you. You're coming from Texas. Like, I'm going to look you up. And while you're gone, do this, you know? But with this, Mike's call was someone who wasn't Gary, remember? Steven seeing someone who wasn't Gary, it's all kind of sounding like it really is like extraterrestrial doppelganger stuff. But even the voice kept saying you're being impersonated by the other voice. So it's like they're saying this. Someone's called your friend acting like you and had the right kind of thing, but wrong. Like came in from the airport, but wrong airport.
Right.
You know? Like said he was or said he sounded sick. And Gary's like, I'm not sick. Like, I'm literally just calling you. Like, just all of this. It's like, what the fuck and who the fuck is this? And so there are two sides to this whole thing. Believers and skeptics, of course. Now, the skeptics just say it was a prank from someone with a tape recorder. They slowed it down. And that's why it sounded like that. Which could be true, like totally could be true. But who and why? Because, like, again, why would Steven have this for a whole fucking year, like in his back pocket? And also, he didn't know Gary was coming. And then it's kind of odd that Gary was in the Air Force. And, you know, we blame the fucking military for a lot of UFO shit. And then his dad and uncle had had the experience before. And so what if he really was targeted or something? Like, what if it was something like that was going on? Like he knew something he shouldn't have known or they thought he did. And also, I think his dad and his uncle were a little outspoken about that experience. And so what if they, like whoever was doing this, if it was like I'm going to scare you kind mm-hmm. of thing, they were doing it to keep him quiet about something. Thinking that he, you know, was going to believe his dad and his uncle and say something like, kind of like corroborate anything like, oh, yeah, I think we do have that kind of plane or like whatever.
Yeah.
But the calls have been reviewed, studied, even like with their voices slowed and stuff like that, because it's not a normal cadence. Y'all heard it. Something is definitely different. They still don't match Steven's voice. It doesn't match Mike. No one close to Gary. And they've even tested it against Gary himself. And it's not a match. Now, after this, Gary went back to Texas. He finished his assignment there. He lived a normal life. He assumingly did not get any other calls. He retired from the Air Force and he began working as a pharmacist in Pennsylvania. Now, Gary didn't write any books about this, like didn't really try to make any money from this experience. He did appear on some TV shows later when the recordings were released, but I think that was because of his dad and his uncle. Like they were like, this fucking alien, mm-hmm. like talk to my son. And so Gary did appear, but it's been less than a handful. And even when he was on there, he was as a skeptic. You know, he's like, I don't believe it's aliens, but I don't have an explanation for it. It's still like it's unexplainable because we've tried to debunk it and we can't. So do you think that was an alternate universe with another Gary? that was like being impersonated by the other voice? Or do you think it was just a prank?
I think just a prank.
I just don't understand like what the prank was for and about. And also, if it was a prank, like you would think that at some point they'd be like, ha, fucking got you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's.
But if it gets too far, they're not going to. Like it took off, you know, like the dad and the uncle and all of that. And it's like.
But I feel like if you're doing that, it's because like they do believe in aliens, like the dad and the uncle. And so you would want to be like, fucking got you. Like, see, I told you aliens don't exist. It was me doing this.
Yeah.
And you fucking fell for it.
But I don't think that's what it was. I think it was somebody that probably knew about the dad and the uncle believing in aliens and was like, ha ha ha, and used it.
But how did they know Gary was there?
That I don't know.
You know what I mean? And then like knew enough about him to know like he had come from Texas that day, like that night even, not even just like during the day, he had got in late. So that's where it's like that other layer of like, but what is it? Like, honestly, it makes me think it was like government kind of shit. Again, of like trying to hush him up, do something, like freak him out enough that it's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do, but like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And then he retired from the Air Force. So I really feel like it's like the Wizard of Oz, like someone was behind the curtain doing it. But why? I don't feel like it was just like his friend Mike. Well, one, they've tested it. And I know like not all tests are just like perfect, but it's just weird. Like, because Gary and his brother didn't mention that thing because they were just like, I don't know who you saw, but like it wasn't me. Like, that's weird that it was the same car and stuff, but it wasn't me. And that's enough to be like, oh, okay, we're driving. Like, maybe it wasn't that. But then for them, Mike to be like, no, I talked to you yesterday. How, and he wouldn't know that he was coming in.
Maybe it truly was just a doppelganger.
I don't know.
I say just, I don't actually understand that, but.
No, I did do a story on
no,
that.
No, I know. I mean, like, I know what it is, but I'm saying.
Just before you point all your fingers at me, ma'am.
I'm only pointing fingers at you for what?
Astral projection.
So you think it's aliens?
I don't think it's aliens. I think it really was like government kind of stuff, or not even government like sanctioned. But like, what if his boss or something didn't want him to say something?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, hey, we can do this and they'll never know.
True.
Because I feel like Gary probably knew enough to be scared of something.
Yeah. Poor Gary.
I know, right?
And Gary 2.0.
Right? The other voice. That's just creepy in itself. You're being impersonated by the other voice.
Yeah, that right there was like, woo.
Yeah, that's fucking creepy.
Okay, well, my story came from a recommendation from Hannah V in the email. We're talking about Donald Joe Neff, and he went by Joe. Joe was born on July 31st, 1947 in Poto, Oklahoma.
Let's go to Poto. That could have been their slogan.
He was once married to Shirley and they had two daughters, but in the early 90s, things went south and they ended up getting a divorce. So Joe was the owner of this bar named the Long Branch Saloon. It was a super popular bar that people just, because people loved Joe. Like, he was one of those guys that people came to for all the things. And they would come to the bar to, you know, of course, drink, party, listen to music, dancing, all the things. The bar was like an Old West type saloon. And
did it have those saloon doors?
I think it did.
Ugh.
And on Sunday, he would even like make chili and soup and feed the patrons for free. Well, on May 14th, 2009, Joe's friend Roger Wilson came by the bar because he and Joe usually would like drink a cup of coffee together. So this is like middle of the week kind of thing. But they would usually drink a cup of coffee together before the bar opened, shoot the shit, yada, yada, yada. Well, when he gets there, one of the bar employees is walking up too. And Joe's car's there. And so they go inside and they're like, wait, where the fuck is Joe? So they start looking around and they find Joe's cowboy hat, which based on all of the pictures that I saw of him online. And there was an episode of Murder Comes to Town on this. I think there were a couple of shows about this. But anyway, like, he was not ever without his cowboy hat. Like, all of the pictures, he had his hat on. And once they found the cowboy hat, they also found some blood. So they immediately call the police and the investigation begins. They see that there's blood droplets that lead out of the door. And then behind the bar is where they find a bunch of blood. But you could tell that somebody had tried to clean up the area, but like very quickly. But obviously they weren't successful because there was a lot of blood left. They did find a 9mm shell casing. But the thing that was weird was that there was a lot of money left on the bar. Like thousands of dollars was left on the counter.
So it was like Joe was counting the money or something?
It seems like it. I mean, you know, on the TV shows and stuff when they do their dramatization, I don't know how accurate that is, but that's the position the money looked like it was in. As police are looking around the bar, they get really excited because they see security cameras. And they're like, we just hit pay dirt. Like, we're going to see the whole thing.
Didn't work.
So they go into the office and they find this huge, like, locked box that has the main hard drive and all for the camera system. So they're like, the key's got to be around here somewhere. So they're digging, like, in his drawers, looking for everything. And in the desk drawer, they find the keys to the lockbox. When they open the door, they find that the entire security system is gone. So they're like, okay, somebody's for sure trying to cover their tracks. So pretty quickly, they go to the company that services the equipment, takes care of everything. And when they talk to the guy, he's like, yeah, I'm the one that does the services for there. That DVR is in the shop.
Oh my gosh.
He was like, yeah, I was just out there earlier in the week. It was messed up, so I have it. So the police are trying to figure out, like, who in the world wanted to hurt Joe, because he was, like, just this one-of-a-kind guy who was, like, so loving and caring and giving. And, you know, he had this bar that he had just, like, built from the ground up that was successful. And so because he was so successful, he was able to help the people around him. Like, even Shirley, his ex-wife, he still helped her. Like, financially, he still got her Christmas and Valentine's gifts. He bought her medicine, all the things. So, I mean, he was very generous with his money. So very quickly, the family, of course, finds out what's going on, and they start developing search parties to see if they can find Joe, because again, there's no sign of him. His car is there, his hat's there. I think even his wallet and stuff was there, but no Joe. And everybody's there, the whole town. His kids, who are like grown adults, you know, because when Joe went missing, he was like, well, I saw some stuff say 60, some stuff said 61. Could have done the math. Yes. Did I? No. It was one of the two. Am I scrolling back up to look at his birthday to do the math? Yes, I am. He was 61. So like I said, the whole town is there to help with the search. Shirley, his ex-wife, is there. Her brother Larry's there. The kids are there. Everybody is helping to look. They've got posters. They've got all the things. But I'm also like, Shirley, bitch, you better be there, because he's still taking care of you after y'all been divorced since like 1993. I don't really know when their divorce ended, but like, I know that like everything said their marriage got rocky in like 93, 94. So I imagine right around there. This is 2009, you know? So the police turned to Teresa, who was the employee that came to the bar with Roger, like at the same time. She was heading into work. Now, I will say some of these names may have been like made for TV names, because I never saw Teresa's name in an article. But on the show, that was her name. So that could be an alias for some of these names. But some of them, I found that in articles as well. Anyway, so air quotes Teresa, maybe. She was the one who, like I said, was there with Roger. She was coming into work. Roger was coming to drink coffee. So the police interview Teresa, and they find out that Teresa and Joe were kind of seeing each other, romantically, that is. And the thing that Joe really liked about Teresa was that she didn't want anything from him. Like, she just wanted him. She wasn't, you know, like his ex-wife, you know, still getting some money from him. She wasn't like all the other people who relied on him. She just liked his company, and that's what he liked about her. So they are like, okay, well, you know, the whole, where were you? But where were you when Joe went missing? She had another job that she was working when he went missing, and her alibi checked out. So they go to interview the friend Roger because they're like, okay, well, you know, why are you here? Well, mm-hmm. like I said, he goes to have coffee with him. And, you know, to us, that's like not far-fetched because, right. I mean, your dad had the friend that came over every afternoon. They had coffee.
Yeah. And your dad went to
the coffee shop every morning and had coffee with his friends. So I'm like, okay, that seems reasonable. But when Teresa and Roger were with the police, of course, were like, well, is there anybody that you can think of that would have wanted to hurt him? They both say different people.
Well, shit, like people liked him. So how do they have different people?
Well, Teresa told police that Joe was in an argument with Shirley. And then Roger says, well, there was this guy that had been kicked out of the bar recently for getting a little unruly. So police are like, okay, like who's this guy that got kicked out of the bar? Because they also said that, you know, when Joe kicked somebody out of the bar, like it was usually like a kerfluffle, you know, I don't think kicked out of a bar kerfluffle have ever been used in a sentence together before, but it was. So the guy that was kicked out was kind of known as a hothead around town. Like people knew who he was, but he didn't have a record. So the police go to talk to him and like, all right, tell us what's going on. Like, what's going on? And he's like, look, I was drunk when Joe and I got into our argument. Like, it's no big deal. We're cool now. Literally, it was the whiskey. And they're like,
we get that.
Yes. And they were like, okay, well, where were you? And he was like, oh, I was at work. I work at a gas station. Just check the cameras out because it's a freaking gas station.
Yeah, those cameras were working.
Right. So they do, and his alibi checks out. Well, the night that Joe went missing, the family and everybody had been searching. When night fell, though, they went back to his house to sleep there in hopes that maybe he would come back. Maybe they get a phone call. Maybe. Well, while they're in there, his daughter notices that this bedroom door that is literally always locked, always wasn't locked. And the reason why this room was always locked was because it had Joe's safe in it. And this safe contained guns and a lot of money. So she goes in to check it out and she realizes that all the money in the safe is gone. Now, this kind of changes things for police because all the money had been left at the bar, but now this money is clearly missing from the safe. So money did play some part of this.
But what if the money that was at the bar was the money that was from the thing?
The bar had that kind of cash on hand.
Okay.
I think this was like big money.
Oh.
Yeah. Nothing ever said how much money was in there. But I mean, I'm thinking more than like $1,000 or $2,000, but I'm also like, okay, if you stole money, like why didn't you steal the bar money then?
Right. Like why leave one and steal the other?
That mystery never gets answered. But all of the guns were there in the safe, but just the cash was gone.
And also, if you were going to take the cash, why would you not take the guns and
pawn them? Those? Maybe they knew that pawning guns that had serial numbers on them would get them caught.
But, I mean, I feel like a lot of people do that. And if you're stealing and stuff, you probably know someone to, like, be your little fence or whatever it is where...
I mean, maybe.
But also... just to have them too. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I have questions.
Well, the lock was a combination like boop, boop, boop lock. Cause I mean, picture it was like a gun safe, not like a in the wall safe. It was a gun safe.
Yeah. But like you said, beep, boop, 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 boop. So it was like that. When you said it was a lock safe, I thought it was going to be like,
I don't actually know. Ours is a beep, boop, 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 boop. I don't know.
I don't know either. Just wondering.
So anyway, either way, it had a combination of either turn numbers or punch-in numbers that really only Joe knew how to get in. Now, the son-in-law on the show, Murder Comes to Town, said that Joe kept the combination in his wallet, but I never saw that anywhere else. But so the family's like, okay, well, who else would know how to get into this?
I feel like Joe told him that just to see if he would ever steal his wallet and try to do it.
Well, the police aren't done with Shirley because Teresa said Joe and Shirley were in an argument and it's good logic that Shirley may be one of the ones to know the combination since they had been married, you know? So the police go to Shirley and they're like, well, what's this we hear about y'all being in an argument? Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And kind of find out Shirley was pissed because, all right, so Joe's helping her pay her bills, get her medicine, do all the things. And he's doing it because, like, they had kids together and he just, you know, wants her to be okay. That's the mother of his kids. But Shirley wanted a new car. And Joe was like, no, I'm not buying you a new car. And basically, this was the first time Joe had ever told her no. And she was pissed. But she told police, like, look, we're fucking exes. We fight sometimes. Like, it ain't.
We got divorced for a reason.
Yeah, we're fine. Like, we got an argument. We're fine. But here's the thing about Shirley. Shirley had very advanced emphysema COPD. So physically, she wouldn't be the one. Like, there's no way she could have been the one to attack Joe and drag him out of his bar.
Yeah.
To wherever he may be. So Joe has been missing for 3 days at this point. When a fisherman was on the bank, you know, fishing, and he finds a body. And this is about 20 miles away from the saloon and where Joe lived in Poto. Well, he, of course, immediately calls the police, like, I found this body. So when they get there, they realize that the body is, in fact, Joe Neff's. They see that Joe had a gunshot wound to his left, like, neck kind of behind his ear. And his hands and his legs were bound with wire and zip ties. And duct tape was wrapped around his head. And his body was chained to a cement block.
Okay.
Now, I will say the murder goes to town, comes to town. It does something to town. It did not say any of that. Like, it only said that he had the gunshot wound. But I was like, oh, I guess they didn't want to get a little more, like, gruesome, because that's kind of like a, it does a lot of, like, the dramatization, acting, and all of that, you know? So they left those details out. But here's the thing. Where his body was, not as much, like, where the guy was standing, I don't think, but where the body was, like, on private property. And it had a gate to get to it that's locked all the time because the guy that owns it, Melvin Sharp, is very particular about who comes around his property. He's one of those that, like, which, I mean, duh. I mean, I'm like, please don't come on my property and fall and sue me or something. But he's also keeps to himself, like, that kind of guy where he get off my stoop. So they asked him, like, have you seen anybody? And he's like, they're like, no, people aren't allowed on here. Ain't seen nobody, ain't been nobody. Well, they get the autopsy back, and the shell casing that was found at the bar matched the projectiles that were still in the wound. So they were able to confirm, like, okay, we've got two crime scenes now. Like, we know something went down at the bar. That's probably where he was killed, you know, hence the shell casing. And then he was dumped here. I thought it was interesting, though, on Murder Comes Down, they talked about how there's, you know, because they know now it's this 9mm. Like, for sure, the shell casing and what was it, like, we know for a fact that's what was used to kill him. And they talked about that there's no database for weapons, like how we can, like, here's some DNA, let's look this up in CODIS. There's no database for who owns what weapons. And they said because of the Second Amendment. But they said, like, if you have a name, you can, like, see what weapons they've purchased. They can't just be like, okay, who in town has a 9mm? But I'm like, what's that have to do with the Second Amendment? Do I not get the Second Amendment? Like, the Second Amendment in the States is, like, your right to bear arms. Mm-hmm. But, like, why is it going to be a secret?
I have no idea.
I don't understand. I don't understand gun stuff. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why. I mean, like, we have literal public records of who owns what property. Like, why could the police not have a database of, okay, so these are all the guns that have been sold in Mississippi, you know? Mm-hmm. After Joe died, his estate was divided between Shirley and his daughters. Shirley got a $17,000 annuity, and then his daughters got the rest.
What do you think about that?
About Shirley getting an annuity?
Yeah. Well, also, what's an annuity?
Annuity is like, you get it every year.
Oh. Oh, like annual.
Yeah. Let me just say, though, getting an annuity can really fuck you in the States out of Medicaid, because my grandma had, she worked for Avon forever and was like all the things, but she had an annuity with Avon, I think. And when it was time to put her in a nursing home, so in the United States, Medicaid's basically the only thing that pays for you to long-term live in a nursing home. And so her Alzheimer's had progressed to a point where she'd been living with my mom's brother, her son, but her Alzheimer's had progressed to a point where they weren't able to care for her anymore. And so it was time she needed around-the-clock care. That, you know what I mean? Anyway, she got admitted to one of the nursing homes, Medicaid pending, and Medicaid denied her because she had an annuity, which means that she got a different amount of money every year. And we're talking like dollars, y'all. We're not talking like $17,000. We're talking about like she got like $100, $101, $103.
Wow.
But because the amount was different every year, they were like, your income's unpredictable. Denied.
Wow.
So, yeah. So the time that she was only in the nursing home like 3 months. But before she passed away, but that time we had to pay for it out of pocket.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think she had a little bit of money because we were going to have to go through the Medicaid spend down. So what she had that we would have had to go through Medicaid spend down was just enough, because it's like $4,000 a month, you know?
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. So I think if they had like gotten the annuity, to answer your question, I think if they had gotten the annuity when they were married and that was like part of the divorce decree and all of that, I have no problem with it.
Yeah, me either with that. But like after, like if this was just.
Yeah. Stay put.
Okay.
Stay tuned, I meant to say.
Well.
Stay put and stay tuned. You got to stay to listen.
Okay.
So the family is like, who the fuck did this? Like police are really kind of getting nowhere. So the family like hired private investigators and they hired someone to dive into the pond to see if they could find a weapon, because like it's reasonable to assume that if they dumped his body, they would chuck the gun too. They did find Joe's phone and a tarp that they think may have been used to like drag him and stuff out of the bar, but they didn't find a gun. So time goes on, and 3 years later, January of 2012, another tragedy hits their family. Remember how I told you Shirley had really bad emphysema?
Yeah.
Well, she was really struggling with it, and Shirley actually died by suicide because of her struggles with emphysema.
Oh, gosh. Bless her.
And, you know, a few months after this, the police really pick this case back up, and they're like, okay, we've got to figure out, like, why did they take the body from the bar to this place? Like,
right.
The place has to be significant because it's so obscure. It's 20 miles away. It's a very rural area. It's like this place was chosen. It wasn't like it was a lake or a pond that they just drove a county over and like, okay, Lake Erie's right here. Let me just go for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like
exactly.
This was clearly something that they knew.
Well, and that this guy is so particular.
Right.
With the gate and all of that.
So the police go back to Melvin and they're like, okay, we know you hate, of course, y'all, obviously I'm paraphrasing here. I have no idea what they said. Like, we know you hate us, but like, can you help us?
Was he dating Shirley?
No. On Murder Comes to Town, they said that they asked him, like, do you live alone here? And he's like, yes. And they're like, have you always lived alone here? And he's like, well, I used to have a roommate named Larry Nichols. Remember him? Shirley's brother. But I found an article, though, that said Melvin told the police that Larry had shown up on the 14th, which was like when they realized that he was missing. So like, I'm not really sure if it was like 13th into the 14th or if it was the 14th morning. I'm not 100% sure. But basically, it was the day he was killed. And while Larry was there, Melvin had gotten a call being like, hey, Joe's missing. Because, you know, this spread like wildfire through this town. And that when he got that call, Larry Nichols was like, okay, cool. Gotta go. But by the by, tell no one that I've been here. So I don't know if the police got both of those information. I don't know if one of these stories is true more than the other, if it's kind of a combo. But it makes sense of why he would have let Larry come see him that day if they had been roommates before. Well, now that police are like, Larry, like, we've got a connection now of Larry to this place.
Right.
They go to try to see if in the database that doesn't exist, does Larry have a 9mm? It was like a Ruger 9mm. I don't know what the fuck any of that means.
Yeah, Colby was telling us a joke today, and he said, like, a gun type, and he was like, it's a type of gun, and we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, thank you for the details. So they go to different pawn shops to be like, hey, have you sold a gun to Larry Nichols, blah, blah, blah. So they go to this pawn shop, and they're, like, looking it up, and they're like, no, we've never sold to a Larry Nichols, but we've sold to a Judy Nichols. AKA Larry's wife.
Ooh.
So Larry's wife had bought a gun, a 9mm that matches the caliber that was used to kill Joe. So they go talk to Judy. Judy tells police that she had purchased the gun, but it was a present for Larry. She bought it, gave it to him. It was never hers. She never like shot it or anything. Like, she gave it to him. So the police are like, cool, cool. Now it's time to talk to Larry. So they go and they're like, so tell us, like, you got a lot of guns. Tell us about your guns. Can you like, which ones do you have? So he's listing off what he's got, and he never mentions he has a 9mm. So they're like, but didn't Judy buy you one? And he's like, oh yeah, I got a shit memory. I forgot about that. I think I gave that to Joe. So
he gave it to Joe.
Right. I'm like, okay, Larry. So they're like, well, while we're here, can we do a little searchy search? And he's like, cool. So they like go look at his guns. They don't find the 9mm, but they do find a hole in the wall that has a, this is how much I know about guns. Let me read you what I wrote. In the wall from a 9mm and the slug, open parentheses, question mark, close parentheses. Like, the fuck is a slug?
Yeah.
Is that the casing? Oh, yeah. Yeah. But no, you have like no idea.
Slug.
But what's the difference in a slug and a casing and a bullet?
A slug is the casing and the bullet together?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I have no idea.
I love how you're like, yeah, a
but
slug.
I've heard a slug.
Yeah, but like, doesn't yeah, mean you know what it means.
No.
Okay. I did my Google search, AKA I called my husband, and the slug is the like lead part that comes out. The bullet's the whole thing. The slug's the lead part. And then the casing's the shit that's left over. Okay. So the slug was still in the wall. So we're like getting all matchy-matchy with the pieces. So it puts the gun in the house, in his house. Judy bought it. It's a 9mm. We got to, you know, put these pieces together. So then the police contact a dive team. And the dive team's like, hey, guess what? We got some new equipment we want to try. So they go down, and it doesn't take them long before they end up finding the gun.
Really?
And serial number's intact. It matches the one Judy bought at the pawn shop, which she said she gave to Larry. So now we've got a paper trail to go get a warrant and arrest Larry Nichols. So Larry actually goes to trial. It's like the trial lasts just a couple of days. The jury deliberates for like 4 hours. And they find him guilty of first-degree murder, and they sentence him to life without parole, along with like $10,000 in fines. Unfortunately, Larry only served about, well, less than a year before he died of lung cancer.
God, that's a lot, like, in that family, though.
Yeah.
Emphysema, COPD.
Well, they all smoked very heavily, and they even said that in the thing, like every one of them smoked very heavily. But, okay, this is where I'm like, what do we think about Shirley? Because let me be clear. There's nothing that shows or proves that Shirley was involved in this at all. Where the money went, no idea. Do I know how much money it was? No. Why Larry killed Joe? We don't really know. I mean, other than money, but like, why then? And then why not take the bar? You know, like, there's a lot of questions that I don't know the answers to.
Now, did Shirley get a new car after this?
Well, I don't know. But I do know that one of Joe's employees told police that Shirley, like one time they were fighting and Shirley said, quote, this is from the employee. Shirley stated that she could pay her brother $100 and he'd blow him away.
Wow.
So it's like, was that just one of those, like, I'm so mad at you. I could pay my brother $100. He'd kill you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was that one of those, or were they in it together?
I don't think so. I think she might have just been talking to her brother and being mad and being like, he's so selfish and, you know, all of the things. And then her brother took it upon himself to do this. I mean, that's just where I'm kind of getting from it. Like, but if she got like a new car after that, then I would say they were in cahoots. Or if she said like a certain number or something, I don't know. Cause why did they leave the money, like some money, but not all of it?
Yeah. Yeah. The money being left at the bar is so weird to me, because here's the thing. None of the people in this story were high rollers. You know what I mean? I mean, I just feel like anybody, if you're killing someone for money, clearly, because you're stealing the money from their house, why did you not take it off the bar?
Right.
Like, they aren't millionaires. You know, like, we all can use money.
Right.
And if I'm killing you for money, why am I not taking it all?
Yeah.
So, like, was it they got in an argument and he's like, well, while I'm here, I'm going to, you know what I mean? Or did
Shirley go take money from the safe, though? And maybe Joe didn't know that the money was gone at that point?
Or did Larry go take the money and he like stopped by the bar or something and Joe confronted him, or, I mean, whatever.
Right.
Like, we literally never found out.
Yeah. Cause it could be like we were talking about, like, that could not even correlate to that.
Right.
You know, like, it could have been something before that, because Joe's not allowed to say, yes, this money was here right before, because only he knew what was in there after that.
Literally none of them are allowed to tell us.
Fuck.
Yeah. Also, the part about Shirley dying by suicide, like, because of her emphysema, it literally made me have a hard time breathing. Like, just because my heart broke for her so much in that moment of, like, she couldn't breathe,
yeah,
and she couldn't live not being able to breathe. And I feel like, I mean, I have absolutely no idea, but like, even just like watching people on videos going into caves, like where they have to go into small, you know, that just like being scared that you can't breathe, just hearing that made me not be able to breathe, you know?
Yeah.
So if that's like why she did it, like, that broke my heart. And like, it broke my heart.
Well, that reminds me of my mom, and you made a good point one time, because for my mom, she had COPD, and so the air wouldn't come out of her lungs enough so it could, like, fill back up.
Right.
Correct. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all the way.
It's like you have a balloon full of air. The air would not completely go out of the balloon so that she could fill it back up. It would stay a little bit full, so when she'd take a breath, like, she just couldn't expand enough.
Right. And I was with her all the time, like, at the doctors and stuff, and they would tell her, like, you have to blow out, like, 5 seconds mm-hmm. to get all the air out and stuff. And so, like, if we were doing something, because she had oxygen that, or as she would say, octogen or
however. Octogen.
Octogen, yes. Like, you know, like, she would have it on her nose, but she would need to breathe. And so I'm like, hey, you know, like, I would try to tell her, because she's, like, making me want to hyperventilate because of how she's breathing. And Carrie told me to suck in through a straw. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of.
And like, that's what my mom would feel like. And like, me doing that, I was like, oh my God, like, I'm such an asshole being like, 5 seconds, like, because I'm trying to help her.
Yeah.
But it's like, when just getting that little bit of air mm-hmm. and stuff, like, that's so scary. And mm-hmm. like, you really don't know, like, you can't breathe. And so that's just thinking about Shirley, it had to be worse than what my mom was going through. I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Because like, when we get nervous or like stressed or whatever, it's just like, I just need to breathe, and we can, but they can't.
Yeah. Even when I'm at my like most anxious and I'm like, it literally feels like there's an elephant on my chest, I still can breathe better than they can. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you still can take that deep breath, and it's like, okay, yeah.
I want to say either Tiffany, I think it was Tiffany that had that idea. I think you're giving me credit, and it was Tiffany. Because didn't she in her health class have to, like, jog in place and then bend, or somebody, anyway, Tiffany's going to be like, it was me, damn it. But they had to, like, jog in place in their health class in college, And then with the straw, they had to bend their head down after they jogged and try to breathe through the straw to catch their breath.
I do not think it's Tiffany. And Tiffany, if it is, I'm very sorry.
It was either Tiffany, my sister Casey, or our friend Ashley.
I don't think Tiffany took health in college. It was just us, and we failed. Because it was online, of course.
That was nutrition, damn it.
Is that not the same?
Now that everyone is, like, trying to breathe in their car listening to this, and they're like, okay, y'all are giving me anxiety.
Right? Also, when did you know you were an extra large pizza? When you fell nutrition.
Twice. Literally twice. You I did it twice. It
twice? Uh-huh. Oh.
Completely forgot about it.
Those were hard, though, because, like, it had, like, three tests. That was it. And so we missed one, and we're fucked.
Yeah. If I miss one, I'm not going to do the rest of them. I failed the class.
Yeah.
Well, y'all let us know what y'all think about both of these stories. But to be clear, though, there was nothing in anything I saw that tied Shirley to anything. That's
right.
Purely speculation on our part from that one quote that I had seen in an article. None of the articles said anything about it, and neither did the show that I watched.
Right.
This was also on the show Fatal Family Feuds, but I didn't see that one. So thank y'all so much for the recommendations, and let us know what y'all think. And don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.